What is up, everybody? Today on the show, we have James Wisner. You might know him as Jay Wiz, three-time Grammy Award-winning engineer, also front-of-house dub wizard for Slightly Stupid. He is one of our favorite people to tour with, also one of our all-time favorite mixers, and today we're going to talk his approach to mixing, his story on both the studio side and the live side, and of course, talk bagels and some other things. What is up, Jay Wiz? How you doing, man?
What's up, guys? How you doing tonight?
Good, dude. Where are you calling in from?
I am currently in North Miami, Florida. The Sunshine State, arrive alive, is the theme here.
Look at this, guys.
What is that? It looks like a ring, a micro ring.
That is one of my painted toenails that just popped off.
Yikes. Yeah, Chris paints his nails.
I dropped a brick on a toenail and it looked like that.
But to the happier point, we usually start off this podcast with the question. And the question is kind of, I think it's going to become the basis of this entire podcast and probably the basis for Los and my Instagram channel. But it's about bagels.
Dude.
What kind of bagel you prepare? Because the biggest fight here is between original Philly and strawberry cream cheese.
No, I need to talk to you about this, and there's something very serious that we need to have a discussion. And
you just get it off your chest,
dude. You do not
dude,
rely yeah. on Philadelphia Inc. to mix your fruit and your cream, okay? cream cheese
oh, man.
Should only be plain, chive. And that's about Ooh. It. That's about it.
Yes.
Okay. You can add lox. You can go lox cream cheese because sometimes you don't have real lox and you go lox cream cheese. And that's cool. But you do not, like, you can put jam on a bagel with cream cheese, strawberry.
You see?
Great.
Yo, is it hot,
blueberry,
hot pepper jam or?
Hot pepper, whatever the fuck you want. But you don't get strawberry cream cheese. Never. Never.
Chris, who showed you the jam on the cream cheese first, man?
You know, I don't quite remember. Not gonna say.
Oh, come on,
Carlos. It was Carlos. It was Los.
Dude, you thought it was weird.
Yeah, in Philadelphia, they'll get you on. They got like honey almond, and like they got weird ones, and they'll try to get you. But that's just.
Yo, I had their salmon one, and it was. I literally threw it out. I made one bagel, spit the bagel out, and then threw out the box of cream cheese.
Yeah, you just gotta find
horrible.
Your best local Jewish deli and go get a half, you know, whatever, carton of lox cream cheese or chive cream cheese or just plain cream cheese.
I support that. Finding your fucking local
support your
bagel
local
club.
Business, bagel club, and get some fucking fresh cream cheese.
So you haven't walked us through it yet, though. So what is your bagel? Like if you were on the bus, you get up, what is the bagel
okay.
you make?
So I was actually just telling this story a couple of days ago. We were in New York on like a winter tour, one of those like off-market winter tours. And there was a bus and a trailer and lots of snow. And all I remember is going to the bagel restaurant in the morning and couldn't decide between the quintessential lox cream cheese capers bagel or the egg, cheese, and bacon bagel.
Oh. Egg, cheese, and bacon. Oh, let's
did
go.
Did you get them both? Yeah, those are so...
No,
those are my
I did
go-tos.
Not, I did not get them both. I combined them both into one bagel.
Whoa!
And I had a lox, cream cheese, capers, eggs, bacon, cheese, bagel.
That, oh,
there's
my
a,
there's
God. A picture
let's
of
go.
Somewhere, and it was definitely epic fucking bagel. The best bagel ever.
That's awesome, dude. All right, so my first question for you, Jay Wiz, is when and how did you get into the music industry? How'd you end up in this crazy world that we live in and work in?
I mean, I had been playing drums for a long time since I was like 7th, 8th grade. So that was where it started my music like endeavor. You're in a band, your next like inclination after making songs is recording them. So learning about that process kind of intrigued me a little bit. I went to a local university called FIU for a year after high school and realized that I was kind of bored with all the remedial stuff. So I ended up taking like a recording arts class in Miami-Dade here and then went to Full Sail for a year. Came back to Miami and ended up getting a gig at a studio called Circle House. And Circle House was owned by Inner Circle, the reggae band. Bad Boys, Bad Boys, What You Gonna Do? Legendary artists from Jamaica, Jacob Miller, like, you know, legendary reggae connection. And they had a studio and a band. And I ended up, because of my live music, you know, background, I started like roadieing for them. So they didn't take me to shows, and I would push cases and set up gear. And then after a couple gigs of that, I was the monitor engineer. And then after a couple gigs of that, I started doing front of house for them. And then I ended up doing front of house for them for like 2 or 3 years. And we went on tour with Slightly Stupid, and them kind of traded tour for studio time. And after 2 weeks on tour with Slightly Stupid came back to Miami and recorded in the studio for a week. And I was just kind of tasked with recording the session. So we did the session. We recorded a bunch of music. We smoked a bunch of weed. We played a bunch of fucking Call of Duty, Nazi zombies. Like, that kind of like was the bond, you know, trifecta bond between us. And 12 years later, I've mixed every live show except for one, and recorded every and produced and mixed every album since, you know. And that session ended up being the slightly not stoned yet stupid enough to make breakfast and eat bacon and pancakes and eggs or whatever.
That is completely my childhood. Is I grew up with a band, and we would take breaks during band practice in my junior high, you know, in their parents' basement, and we would play Call of Duty, and it always ended with us actually punching each other when someone would shoot someone. And that's how like every band practice ended, because someone would get really mad and someone would punch someone, and that was, then you'd go home back to your parents' house at 13.
Yeah, we did Call of Duty, but we also did a lot of Halo on the bus, and that was cool, because there was a time when like there would be 4 people playing Halo, you know, we were just like, everyone on the bus would be taking turns doing like a giant Halo tournament, you know, like that was cool. But so I worked with Slightly Stupid and for 12 years doing live sound. I was at Circle House for 7 years before that, doing major label recording sessions, mixing, assisting some of like the most legendary mixing engineers of our time, you know, kind of like the last golden era of the studio recording industry, where there was actually like major label facilities with large format consoles, you know, 2-3 days on one song with the president of Atlantic sitting in the session talking about whatever was coming out of his ass, like what he thought about the mix, you know, and the mixing engineer just right. kind of like, okay, whatever, you know, well, I'm going to keep doing what I do, you know. And it's just like, it was a cool time to kind of be in the right place at the right time, I guess.
So I have a lot of questions for you. Okay. And it's going to start with studio and then go to live. But my first question, as far as studio is concerned, is where did you start? Did you use tape? How did you like using tape if you did? And how did your workflow change as things transitioned into the digital era?
I started in 2004, and in the major label studio, everything was backed up to DAT tapes, but very rarely was there any actual backup to a half inch. And if it was, it was mixes backed up to a half inch or printed to a half inch. Every once in a while, we would bounce an old, you know, 16 track analog tape to digital, but there wasn't mm-hmm. much recording to tape, because it was primarily a hip hop, reggae, pop. Like, you know, there was the studios around the block doing rock stuff that were definitely printing tape a lot more, but just they weren't doing it there at that time.
Then I want to explain quick what tape is. DAT tape, like tape you is? Said, is digital audio tape, so it's Scotch. Digital signals processed. Yeah, it's got you put Scotch tape onto a reel. No, but original tape was mainly 2-inch, and it is magnetic audio tape. So it's kind of like the cassette tape you would use in a normal tape player, but on a much higher resolution, a much higher level.
Think about,
so that's what we're discussing here.
A scrolling Etch-a-Sketch drawing a picture in electronic.
Wow, what a great
audio.
Analogy.
Yeah, it's like magnetic bits being imprinted with trick pulses to create a audible recording that, you know, pioneered a whole industry for 50 years.
And which is often, you know, like, which is often referred to as one of the most warm and compressed, but it's always considered as warm because there's a different characteristic that audio takes on when you put it through a tape machine.
You could just slam it. No, you could just slam the fuck out of it. You know, like imagine a giant like mylar, like plastic. What's that shit you cover all the equipment with during the set change?
Visqueen.
You know, like imagine a Visqueen, but a little bit stretchier, and just like punching it, and like that saturation and like stretch in that, you know, like imagine just hitting something hard, but it never really distorts because it's a physical thing that you're like hitting, you know, where in Pro Tools is just like a hard, you know, flat line where you have a square wave, you know. No, but for real, it's you know, tape is a physical medium that you're slamming information into.
So then after that, obviously you live in the digital realm now. So I want to know, number one, how do you transition from analog to digital, and how do you feel about that? Like, do you miss the digital age? Do you wish you were still back on tape? You know, give me all the details about that kind of that transition. All
right, so I've been in a studio for the last 3 years where I had a SSL AWS as the console that acted pretty much as a summing mixer from Pro Tools. So you're using Pro Tools, you're using the, you know, the power of the digital world with the, you know, as much analog warmth and separation, and had some cool gear, and it sounds great, you know. For the last year, I've been subleasing that room to somebody else. Actually, a legendary dude named Don Corleone, who's a reggae producer who's done all kinds of like legendary shit, protege,
that's
crazy
shit.
That's
not his real name. There's no way it's his real name.
No, his name's Don Corleone for sure. So I've been in a kind of I've stripped down to a mixing suite where I'm in a Pro Tools room, but I have analog front end, and then I also am using that API 2500 right now, thanks to Joe Williams from 3G and Joe Williams Music, my good boy. Yeah, Joe. He lent me the API 2500, so I'm running everything through that, and it's like, dude.
I feel like you're just gonna keep it at this point.
A little bit of warmth goes a long way in the the Pro Tools digital world. So it's just clean quality input, and then there's a whole world of plugins and stuff that you can use to manipulate sound. I've kind of always been a...
Do you have any go-to?
Minimalist. EQ7 and, you know, D-Verb and maybe R Compressor and a C4. I try to not get distracted by the hype of every new plugin that comes out and, like, what it can do because, you know, decades upon decades of classic timeless music was recorded with like a few simple tools. Mm-hmm. And I feel that there's no reason to change that formula, you know?
Yep. So.
And I feel like you've said this a lot already in this little segment, but I feel like one of the hallmarks of your mixes for me is your compression. Is that one of the most important plugins that you use, or one of the most important outboard pieces of gear you use?
I don't know if to say it's one of the most important, but I feel like it definitely on an individual channel per channel basis helps like put the icing on the cake, essentially.
Have one on your master bus too, correct?
Never digitally. I've never put a digital.
No, but you in your rack, you have the analog compressor in your master bus, yeah?
Only one tour. One summer, and I couldn't tell you what year it was, a few years ago.
That's the one that I was
maybe
on,
you were
because
on,
I saw that.
I had an Avalon 747 mastering strip.
That's the tour that I met you on.
Yeah, and that was pretty cool.
Is there a piece of gear that you like can't do a show without?
The S6L.
Boom. Okay. Shout out, Avid.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that thing is so intuitive. Like, it's so, you know, manipulative. I love it, you know. I love the previous, you know, series of D Show and that stuff, but the SXL to me not only like performs well for functionality for a reggae show, like a Slightly Super show where I'm constantly moving and doing, and you know, but it sounds great. The audio, the recordings are so easy and sound great, you know, sound incredible. And it's a beast. Like, I've seen one get rained on. I had one get completely dumped on, rained on. The banks of faders were like turning off and failing during the show. No interruptions, no clicks, no, you know, no audio interruptions at all.
Wow.
Was able to just go to the menu and just like move the faders. It happened to be the vocal channel bank that failed, and just moved it to another fader bank, continued doing the show. At the end of the show, pulled out the fader bank and like literally poured a couple ounces of water out of it, like rainwater just was in it.
Oh.
Let it dry overnight on the bus with a fan on it. The next day we did a festival in Colorado, I believe, popped it back in, never had a problem with it again.
That's unreal.
Like, there's no other console that could get rained on and fail and not have an audio interruption and still work for another 3 weeks. Like, that's, I've never seen that in any other console. So that alone, like, just like, I love this thing.
Yeah.
Not to mention I could make any button, like, do a reverb throw or a delay, you know, or a reverb bomb.
Dub
or
it.
Delay through all the colored buttons, like you can it's so maneuverable. It's great.
That's what I mainly love about it. You can really set it up however you want.
Yeah,
I feel like great. That's where the future is heading.
Yeah, I feel like they waited long enough and learned enough from like what Digico was doing and some of the other companies, and just came out with a pretty supreme
Let's talk about Digico for a second. What are your thoughts on Avid versus Digico? Because for me personally, the best sound I've heard in my ears is Digico. And it was a night and day.
So for me, Digico multiple times tried to get me to use a Digico console for the show. We would always do that Minneapolis Summerfest, and they would have the Clearwing tent. Oh, dude, the best. I saw Tom Petty there like a year before he fucking died.
Milwaukee.
Like,
Milwaukee.
Oh. Yeah. Anyways, Digico can't. They never figured out how to sync all of the delays to one tap tempo.
I didn't know that.
And up until the point, at least the last time I talked to them, which was at least, you know, maybe 2 years ago, not too long ago. If I had three different delays, I'd have to have a separate tap for each one. And, you know, tap a quarter note on one, a triplet note on the other, and an eighth note on the other. Where with the DigiDesign Avid stuff, I could just link it all to one button that subdivides itself, you know, depending on whatever I sent each delay to. So that for me was just no go. Can't use it. Sorry. I don't care how good it sounds. It's like functionality wise, that would kill the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're wasting time basically dialing in every single delay versus just doing it once.
And because it's a live show, I don't know if anyone has ever seen, like, I'm pretty much tapping through the whole show.
Yeah.
You know, like with the band as they change and, you know, a little slow down, a little speed up. Like, it's all dynamics. It's all part of the magic. And if I just set it and forget it, it won't be right after a minute or 30 seconds or, you know.
Yeah, like whatever. They're not, so, you can't just set it up on a scene and.
No, that's not the type. That's not the gig.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Although those gigs sound nice. I want one of those gigs one day. Just like turn up a vocal up and down for, you know, an hour and a half. That's about it. That sounds good. No, I love it. I mean, I love the most incredible feeling besides being in a band and playing with musicians and having that like mental communication with where you're going and what you're doing. Like that feeling is at an all-time high next to mixing a show and you know, hitting a snare reverb bomb and like hearing the crowd like respond to it, you know, like, and knowing that you're like having a direct effect on these people's like instant moment, you know? And like you look out at the crowd and some of them are fucking tripping out of their mind. Some of them are just enjoying the music, you know, like whatever it is, like that feeling in that moment is only, I've only been able to compare to, you know, being in a band and actually playing that music and having that, you know, moment where you can communicate. And, you know, that's pretty awesome.
Totally, man. I mean, I feel like as a front of house engineer, you definitely have that extension of being another band member and just controlling the sound. Like you've had total control over every single channel. You can
absolutely. Well, let's talk a bit more than just how do you do front of house, but how you interact with the crew on stage, since the point of this podcast is partially to educate.
Definitely. I always had looked at myself as very lucky because I never had the A2 experience. Like I really went from being, you know, just nothing to the guy that was mixing in front of house, you know? And so like, as far as hanging, and I mean that as far as a production realm, as far as like hanging speakers, flying, a lot of sound guys come up through a production company. They're out flying rigs. They're doing fucking shit work all day long, no appreciation. And they're really the guys that set up the sound that makes the show, you know? So like, I never had to do that. I always worked for a band or worked right for the gig that I was mixing front of house. So, you know, when it comes to the Slightly Stupid stuff, I always really wanted to be there as you know, to help with, you know, the setup and the sound on the stage with the crew, you know? So, you know, there's times where I would bump heads with our stage manager and our, you know, production with in defense of the sound team, you know, just because it's like there's two guys. Most of the time there's two guys, right? There's a monitor tech and a front of house tech. And they're flying two sides of the PA, setting up monitor wheels, setting up front of house, setting up the subs. So that's, you know, that sometimes can be a very time consuming challenge depending on the local crew that you get, you know? I mean, sometimes we get fucking people in Birkenstocks and like look like they just haven't gone to sleep since last night, and that's your crew for the day, you know? And it's like,
and you're in a shitty venue on top of that.
Oh, whatever, dude, you know, whatever it is, like, you know, you're just kind of, it's the roll of the dice. So, especially when we, you know, the last couple of years with the, you know, the big rigs and the, you know, 12 aside PAs and the subs, like I would try to always be there as one of them, help them be the one, you know, help them fly aside a PA, help them set up the subs, you know, try to be there, try to learn as much as possible. Cause I just never had that, you know, technical side of it. And I was just always more on the artistic side of mixing and producing. But, you know, I love being on tour. I love the crew. I love, you know, I want to be the bartender. I want to be the barista. I want to fucking, you know, fly your PA for you. Like, I love that shit, you know, and it's a great time.
That's what I'm saying, man. The more stuff you can do, the more valuable you are, you know?
Yeah, it makes it a great time. And, you know, you're making money to be out there and you just might as well, you know, have a good time with your
also at this point, we got to shout out Cyrus and Kristen Taylor. It's got to happen.
Oh, Kristen, Cyrus, you know, Tech9.
Tech9, dude.
You know, Josh Driscoll. Like,
Josh.
Oh, my God. Josh for years. Like, the sentinel all-time, you know, monitor extraordinaire. Like, that guy is...
I mean, I got a secondary shout-out, Doggy, because Kristen Taylor is one of my best friends in the world. So, she'll be on soon. Shout-out, Kristen Taylor.
I talked to her all the time. Slap that pizza out of her hand, you know.
Like, that skinny fat life, you know, it's real.
Raw, dude.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, let's not talk about the fat life of touring with pizza and
it's skinny. It's skinny.
No, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
We already had the bagel talk. Might as well have that talk too.
Dude. Yeah.
Never order after. If you're smart, you don't order after.
Which I'm not smart, so I all.
You just go to bed.
Just go to bed. Don't touch the pizza. I know it smells good.
Don't drink any more drinks. Don't eat any more food. Don't do any more drugs. Just go to bed.
Just go to bed, yeah.
Yeah.
It catches up, Doggy. It catches up.
So yeah, you know, I love touring. I love, you know, traveling, and the crew's been great. Cyrus is a fucking beast. You know, that guy has that shit on lockdown, and, you know, me and him have gone nose to nose sometimes over just things that were, I felt was supposed to be one way and he was supposed to be another way. And at the end of the night, we're having a drink, just laughing about it. You know,
it's like, I've seen it happen.
Yeah. You know, I'm always going to fight for the audio, for the sound.
Of course.
As much as I love lighting guys, shout out to Scott O'Connor and shout out to fucking Dan.
He's coming on soon, actually. Shout out Scott.
Scotty. Nice. But nice. Yeah. Scotty Lights is my favorite friend. I'm always going to fight for the sound, dude. No one goes home singing the lights, you know, like it's the sound that is definitely the strong, most important part of the fucking show. I'm sorry. Like, even if the lights were out, you could have a show without the lights.
No one goes home humming the light show.
I'm going to pull that one out on Lenny, because Lenny always says, no one says, I want to go hear a show. They say, I want to go see a show.
No, that's bullshit.
And yeah, I was like, fuck you.
I want to go experience a show. And the experience is the sound, and that's why we're there, and that's what we get paid to do. And
yeah,
if I got to fight a stage manager, if I got to fight a fucking tour manager, if I got to fight a band member, like, I'm always just going to stand up for what I feel is needs to be done for the crowd to experience,
for the
guy in the front row, the guy that's belly up to the barricade in front of the subs, like, needs to not get fucking destroyed by the subs and needs to have a good time, you know, like, just because he's there, you know, doesn't mean we need to rip his head off with, you know, 60 hertz. So exactly. It's the art of, you know, pleasing 10,000 people or 7,000 people. Or
oh, he's getting whatever. Pleased by that 60 hertz.
No, he likes it. He likes it.
Oh, he loves it.
He's there for a reason. Let's just say that,
it's like the Howard Stern movie, right?
Oh, holy shit.
What are some of your favorite movies, dude? Talking about movies. Like, go-tos, like, classics that you're just, like, on the bus and you're like, I could watch this if it's on, regardless.
I mean, no, classic movies for me, like, I don't know, dude. There's so many classic movies. I like Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
That always reminds me of a classic movie.
Of course. Good soundtrack.
Yeah, great soundtrack.
Great fucking soundtrack. Big Lebowski.
I never, honestly, like, there's some movies like that. Like, I've seen it maybe in parts, but, like, I never was oh my God, it's the greatest movie ever, you know? Pulp Fiction, though, Quentin Tarantino stuff for sure.
Oh, okay.
Great movies like Django.
I vibe with that.
One of the greatest movies, like, I've seen in a long time.
Pulp Fiction and Glorious Bastards.
I've seen so many movies on the fucking plane in the years.
How about the classic comedies, like the Monty Pythons and that kind of stuff?
I grew up with my dad's, like,
Fawlty Towers.
Get Smart. No, it was more like Get Smart and, like, what was the Police Squad? Slapstick kind of stuff like that. Saturday Night Live when it was good back in the day. That was a good go-to bus thing.
Naked Gun.
We always had Will Ferrell's, like, SNL. Will Ferrell's SNL DVD.
Yes.
Is one of the funniest bits of, you know, hour of entertainment that will definitely keep you going on a bus for a while. The Other Guys. Any Will Ferrell movie is pretty much a great movie. The Other Guys is a great...
I love that one.
For sure.
I'm a peacock. Yeah. You got to let me fly.
And even, what was the one where they were the two guys and the Will Ferrell was, like, in prison and he had the dragon. He was, like, the dragon.
He was the dragon, was.
Starsky and Hutch. I think it was Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah, those are all great, great movies, you know. All the Adam Sandler stuff. I grew up listening to old Adam Sandler stuff, like, so, you know, Tollbooth Willie and, you know, just, like, those old Adam Sandler skits.
So good.
From the first couple albums, comedy albums that he did. Like, that stuff's great, yeah.
You know what's fucked up? I grew up with the Bill Cosby comedy albums. Yeah, and now my childhood is ruined.
I never listened to Bill Cosby. I mean, I watched The Cosby Show, but I never really listened to... I loved Eddie Murphy stuff, like Raw.
Oh, dude, and, Raw is amazing. That's the other so one, good.
Delirious,
but also like
Raw. Though Raw was great.
We just watched him last night in Shrek, and God, that fucking donkey is so funny.
Oh, he's can't fucking beat that. Funny, dude. It's so funny. Him going from like that era to fucking like family movie.
Oh, it's amazing.
Dr. Doolittle vibes.
And George Carlin to me was also like a big comedic influence if we're talking about comedians.
Yes, dude.
Had some really great just technique, delivery, content, you know.
I remember finding out about him in the fucking Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back movie.
Did Carlos, did you do sound in Venezuela before you came to America?
No.
Ooh, the Carlos interview. Let's go.
No, I was thinking about this earlier, and I was like, the secret Venezuelan guy, I wanted to find out.
No, I only played music back in Venezuela, and I was in a band, and I was already getting curious about sound, and every time we went in to record, I would always be that person in the band that was like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Let me hear my guitar, and I want it to sound this way, and just trying to balance out the mix. Like, I was always that guy, like, oh, I need this, like, let's make this sound like this, and, you know, I had, like, a vision. I just never put fucking two and two together, like, oh, this can be a career.
Yeah.
And now it's not.
What are you talking about, dude?
How was your Full Sail experience? I'm curious.
I went 2003.
Okay.
It was great. You know, I mean, Orlando sucks pretty much as a city and whole. Sorry to anyone that lives in Orlando, but Orlando sucks. And it's designed for like a third of the amount of people that actually live in the city, you know. So
it's a swamp.
Yeah. But it was great. You know, I went there. I got a good foundation. I felt I had worked in a music store and was in a band, and like, so I had a good understanding of a lot of gear and equipment. And I just felt it was a good like reinforcement and more of just like a pass that when I got back, I was able to apply to a Circle House or a Hit Factory and say, hey, I went to Full Sail, you know?
Definitely.
And if I had to go to school for a year to, you know, and at the time pace, you know, a somewhat reasonable amount of money to get that degree in a year, which was a 2-year degree in 12 months, like,
right.
It gave me the ability to open up a lot of doors. And it might not have, you know, I learned everything watching people do it as an assistant, as an intern, you know, as an engineer. Like, that's where you learn everything. But I definitely got a good foundation. And
that's kind of where I stand. I feel like with that school, you just kind of get what you want to get out of it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I wouldn't go now. Like, and I've told people, you know, when I worked at Circle House, I was basically, for a while, kind of in charge of hiring, firing, training, you know, taking care of the equipment. You know, I was kind of like the everything responsibility there. And I would tell people, like, don't go to Full Sail. Go get an internship at a studio. Because most of the classic engineers never went to school for it. They just ended up somehow working at a studio, you know?
And I think everyone that I know in the industry didn't go to school for this because yeah. I sure as fuck didn't. I dropped out of high school to do this, you know?
Yeah, I think the best, like, I was going to Full Sail and then I left the program to actually go on tour because I was already working at a venue and one of the bands that came through, you know, asked me to go on tour and I left the program to go on tour, and that was the most valuable experience I could have done. One of the best choices I've made.
Oh, dude, yeah, on the job learning, like, you're flying the wall, you absorb, you watch, you listen, you learn, and like, that's how you get, you know, tricks in your bag that make you different from the next guy, you know, and try to.
And I
want to
see how you feel about this, because I've always thought that one of the biggest problems with all these schools like Full Sail, like IPR in Minneapolis, is that you're sitting there in a controlled environment with perfectly set up gear, just learning how to EQ. And one of the biggest parts of tour is, in my opinion, and I want to see if you agree, is troubleshooting. That's what you do for your job, is troubleshooting.
definitely troubleshooting is important, obviously, in live sound frequencies, and like knowing what things are in reference to like maybe EQing is also important. But I think that was one of the things that always was good that benefited me, was I was doing studio stuff as I was doing live stuff, and I was able to maintain both pretty equally. So, you know, in the studio world, you could be working on something and be like, you know what, I'm going to go outside, I'm going to smoke a cigarette, I'm going to fucking think about this, I'm going to come back and I'm going to tackle it again. Or I could go at it over and over and over and over and over again a million times until anyone hears the final product. In the live world, it's right now, right here. It's either you fix it or it's fucked. And if you don't fix it, it's fucked. And, you know, like, there's no other option but to fix it.
Dude, that's amazing. That's amazing. You know? That's so, one of the things I love about what we do.
But also, you know, you need to be able to critically analyze things and make decisions. And so they very much complement each other, because you need to be able to make quick decisions sometimes in the studio, and you need to be able to think things through sometimes during a live show and not over analyze things. Because
right.
Heaven forbid you're doing a Red Rocks or somewhere where the wind is 15, 20 knots, like, you know, 90 degrees against the PA, and you're mixing, and then all of a sudden it sounds like everything goes away, you know, and like you have to be knowledgeable enough and be experienced enough to know that you didn't change anything.
And you have just a dB limit on top of that.
Just the wind is changed, or the wind, you know, there's just whatever it is, like, you know, you just got to kind of have those both qualities of being able to troubleshoot on the moment and being able to also like take a step back and think about something before you make a move sometimes, you know? So, you know, I think that definitely was a benefit to be able to experience both worlds at a pretty professional, you know, the most professional level, I would say, you know, on either side of that spectrum.
Well, do you have any last pieces of advice to give to anyone who's like trying to start in this world, who's trying to get into tour, whether it be guitar tech or audio or monitors, whatever it might be?
Yeah, what's like the best piece of advice that you can give or that you've been given? Yeah.
Know your craft, you know, learn to perfect what it is that you do, and know your path also, and focus on being great at what you do. You know, what they say, be a master of one, and, you know, instead of a master of none, you know, you know so many things, but you're a master of none, or whatever it is. I can't think of the fucking thing, but, you know, you gotta be good at what you do. And if it's one thing, you focus on it and you master it, you know? And, I think most of all, whether it's studio or whether it's live, it's 15% technicality and the rest personality. And if you can't, I mean, it's not that hard. It's just not that hard at the end of the day.
Right.
Even mixing and even like signal flow or production or stage managing, it's not that hard. It's common sense. It's a strategy that's mapped out. You've thought about it. But the way you interact with people can make or break your experience, your day, your hour, your moment, your tour, whatever, you know? So, you know, if you roll in and you're fucking a dick, then you're going to have a dick day. You know?
That's exactly what you're going to get back. Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you roll into a hotel at 6 a.m. and fucking are a gnarly, you know, just rawr, you know, attacking person, you might not get your hotel rooms till fucking 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Exactly.
But if you roll in and, you know, stroke someone's ego and, you know, are super suave with the way you present everything, you might get your room set 11 a.m., you know?
Yeah, dude, I think that goes a long way. And we definitely try to work the same way. And I believe it's kind of like a mentality in the scene that we're working in, the whole reggae scene, that you just treat people with respect, and that there really isn't a reason to have a hard day in doing what we do. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Not at all. That was one thing I would always tell people, crews, local stage, you know, it's like, hey, we're here to make sure you guys have the easiest day of your season, of your year. Like, this should be the easiest day possible, because this is a reggae show where pretty much just one or two people that really care about where anything goes. And after that, no one really cares as long as it turns out great. And we're going to have a barbecue at the end of the night. And you're welcome to hang out and eat some great food. And it's going to be a great time. Let's not have a bad show, you know? And
exactly.
That's definitely one of the benefits of working with a band like Slightly Stupid, because that's the approach. It's like backyard barbecue, have a great time, and, you know, don't take the bullshit too hard. And that's the key, you know?
Yeah, I think that's like the basis of most of our approach to shows. Like, just fucking, hey, we all are here for the same goal, trying to put on a show. We're all a piece of this fucking big puzzle. Let's just do our jobs.
Yeah, we all get paid for, you know, the successful show. You know, we want it to be successful. We all are going to make money. We're going to go home. We're going to have a good time. And let's have a good day and not...
Let's have a good day on top of doing what we do. Yeah, exactly, man.
Definitely. And I've seen, you know, I've seen working in the live production side, like, other productions, you know, whether it's like Ultra Fest or Rolling Loud, or I toured with Phil Collins for a couple of months, like a month and a half. And it was, those are serious, like, you know, everything is so, you know, don't look this way, don't walk that way, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Do, and it's cool, it's great, you know, but it's more like that, you know, more money, more problems type of thing. Yeah, they're making a couple million dollars a night, but it's just so much shit. And
it's a lot more tension in the air. And
dude, yeah, that was
you can't walk through this hallway if you don't have this type of pass. Or...
Yeah, that was a crazy experience, yeah. One of the nights, I was flying delay speakers. So I was flying essentially the equivalent of what we would tour with as PA, 24 L Acoustics K2 speakers, 12 a side. And these were just six pairs of clusters hanging in the backs of arenas, like above front of house. If you've ever been in an arena in a show, front of house is like way in the back of the arena on the floor.
Yeah.
Above front of house in an array pointing up at the nosebleed sections. And for basically a month and a half, I flew me and whatever local two hands I would get, these 24 K2 in six pair clusters or six set clusters all over the country in some of the craziest arenas. But it was a total eye-opening experience to a different world of touring outside of, you know, Slightly Stupid reggae, you know.
Definitely, yeah, man.
Fun time. It was great, you know, like, best of everything, best hotels, best catering, best everything, but...
Different environment.
Like, man, oh, dude.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was great. I learned a bunch, dude. It was a great time, but...
Yeah, it gives you perspective, and it almost makes you appreciate even more, like...
I'll take a Slightly Stupid tour any day.
The other gig you have. Like, yeah, you're just like, this is amazing, dude. I'm traveling with great people. I love the crew I'm with, and... I love the music I'm mixing, and it's a lot of perspective, man. I really appreciate all the other tours I've done besides being in the reggae world, because it really makes you see, like, damn, this gig is pretty awesome, man. You know?
Yeah, you get a better understanding of how everything's supposed to work, and that's the other bit of advice is to maybe if you're a guitar tech, like, also understand what a monitor guy is supposed to do or what a stage manager is supposed to do, so that you know when they're not, someone is not doing their job.
Which we talked about that a lot in our first podcast, is how Los and I work together and try to kind of share the space together and, you know, respect one another in that kind of environment.
Yeah, and I learn from you, you learn from me, and, like, dude, that way you can be a fucking monitor engineer one day, and, you know, I can guitar tech one day. And
I already have been. Fuck you.
Hey, you know what I mean. Well, you, for real.
I had a QL1, bitch. Let's go Yamaha.
Yikes.
Yamaha.
They
make wave runners, dude.
I fucking grew up on Yamaha. Yamaha and fucking K1 and DV DOS.
They make motorcycles and wave runners.
Yeah, dude.
And sick-ass consoles that have Dan Dugan plugins built in, so let's go.
Yeah. No, you're right. In the corporate world, some of those Yamaha consoles are great.
Yep, and of course, I grew up in a corporate firm, so I'm talking about a corporate firm.
But the last corporate gig I did, I had an iPad and a Mackie 16-channel docking mixer. You know, it's like, and you know what? I got paid the same amount as I did for the S6L. You know,
yeah,
super corporate gig. So it really doesn't matter to me.
All right, well,
less equipment, the better, honestly.
Before we wrap up, I have one last question for you. I just want to know what your absolute dream rig is, PA console. And outboard gear if you want to add it.
Okay. K1, K2 combo, you know, PA to suit whatever gig that we're talking about. So for
are you going KS28 subs? Are you going for the reference or
the KS28s and the SBs are great too. Like probably a combination of both. There'd probably be what we had on the Phil Collins tour was like the ultimate tits L acoustics ever. And there was a center above stage like lightsaber of subs hanging.
Oh my god.
Center stage above stage. You know, there was basically four PAs in the arena. Essentially,
yeah.
You know, there was main front of house, there was 360, there was side fills, there was the delays, there was the sub lightsaber, and there was subs on the ground with front fills, and there was also like directional up stage left and stage right.
Are you 108 P's for your front fills, or are you going for wedges?
Whatever gets the first couple rows with some high-end definition, that's all that
matters.
Yeah,
you can throw some Karos or high Qs. It's all good.
Yeah, high Qs are usually great. I send the whole mix left and right through my high front fills.
You go left, right, no mono.
You don't go matrix?
No, I just send a left, right
feed.
Front fill aux, essentially.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's basically a sum to mono mix of the left and right going to the front fills. It's
interesting.
And it's just for high end definition. Like you're down there in front of the subs. You've got, and remember, this is slightly stupid. There's 100 dB of soundstage, sound.
You're getting it.
So anyone in the front row, they just need a little bit of vocals and a little bit of high-end definition because they've got three arcs on top of two, you know, KS28 subs on each side of the stage, on top of the band, on top of, you know, everything pretty much compressed into a small footprint. Like, it's loud.
I've toured with you guys, and those side fills are some of the loudest.
No, they're ridiculous. It's ridiculous. They're the bane of my existence. They literally are the bane of my existence. And
I've seen Jay was yelling on stage, turn the fucking side fills down. Oh my God.
They like those things loud.
But so K2, K1 combo rig, S6L.
Yep.
SXL why not, easy,
why
huh?
Not, why not have a bunch of racks of outboard gear just because, you know, some distressors.
Couple distressors, there you go.
Maybe a 22609 Neve stereo compressor. Oof. Maybe a API 2500, you know, just a couple toys, you know, maybe a couple 1176s. You know, whatever, dream rig. Like, what are you talking about? I'd have five racks of just fucking outboard gear, you know?
Like, we don't have to do the whole thing.
You know, yeah, crane song, head, you know, converter. Like, we'd have everything. We would just do it all, you know?
Oh, but, dude.
Antelope clocks. Like,
I mean, the biggest thing is we don't need... Oh, fuck. Talking about world clocks is a whole nother episode.
That's a whole... we'll have to bring you back for this.
That's like our second podcast. That's super nerdy where we're just saying model names.
Dude, the S6L and a good PA, that's really all you need, in my opinion. I use, just to be clear, I hate waves and the having to buy the grid and the box and the light. Like, I hate Avid for making you pay for, or Pro Tools for making you pay for the production toolkit to get 64 tracks instead of 32 tracks. Like, I use Tracks Live to record everything. It's free. And I use all MIC DSP plugins on the S6L, and they sound incredible. The license is $200-something for the year, and I can use it in the studio or on the console. It's for everything, anytime. and they sound great. I saw Metallica, or no, I saw Ozzy Osbourne's engineer doing it.
Oh, yeah, Greg Price.
Festival I was working. And then I saw, I think, Phil Collins guy was using some Mick DSP stuff. And I was just like, why? And I looked into it, and I was like, why wouldn't you just use this on an iLock that can that costs $250 a year, and that's it, you know? And they take seconds to install, like, the laptop and the Waves grid, like, you know, suck it.
The latency is good, too, yeah. Yeah, dude, shout out Mac DSP.
Shout out EQ3 Deverb all day long.
Boom.
EQ3.
we have to end this podcast because it's getting long now, and Los has to edit this.
We're doing a podcast?
Yeah. I know I already said this, but literally the last question, because the debates tonight, the one we're recording this, is it Trump or Biden?
I'm writing in Kanye, dude.
Oh my God. All right. Well, fuck. On that note, Jay Wiz, thank you so much for coming on. Shout out to the entire stupid crew. We love you guys. It's amazing to talk to you again. It's been a long time. So we just appreciate your time.
Thank you for clearing up this guys. Bagel dilemma and talking to us.
Dude,
and
yeah, don't rely on Philadelphia to mix your fruit and your cream.
Right.
Nah, dude, Philly for life, baby. Sponsor us.
I support Jay Wiz on this.
No, we need a sponsor. We don't have a sponsor yet. We have to have Philly sponsor us, man.
Somebody.
It's going to be Philly.
Have your listeners sponsor you.
That's what I'm talking about. Look at this, man.
GoFundMe at Philly Cream Cheese for Life.
We got some guidance from
Stage Right Value for Value Network. Pay it forward. Chip in. Great content. These guys are doing great. Let's keep it going.
Fuck yeah, man!
Right, well, thank you so much, brother. It's so good to talk to you again.
The PayPal link will be in the show notes.
Hey, yo, dude. So before we wrap up, I know besides music, you also have your own company. Can you tell the people what that's about?
Oh, yeah. I've got a CBD company called HCBD.
Oh, no shit.
We have a website. It's called hwellnesslife.com. And then we have about 20 products, health and wellness, skincare. One of our most popular products is a sleep spray. You spray it on your tongue. It has melatonin in it, helps you sleep. There's an anti-stress spray that's great. So it's cool stuff. It's not just oils and vape pens. It's a lot of cool, like, health and wellness products. So definitely.
Well, we
got to
get you back on to talk about that for sure.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff, man. CBD is incredible. It really is. You know, there's a reason it's everywhere. It's just navigating the kind of the pollution and knowing what's good stuff. And there's some good stuff out there. You just got to find it.
CBD is amazing. I'm a huge advocate.
Yeah. We wanted to give back. We work with a charity called Love Hope Music in Miami in Florida. So they do a bunch of good stuff. We give money to them. We try to work with the community, you know, and it's just about helping people's health, helping people's lives, and just helping them live a better quality life, you know, with natural remedies and not pharmaceuticals.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah. And after seeing 12 years of the cannabis industry from Slightly Stupid's point of view, where you know, it's come so far, you know, to where you used to have to hide to smoke a joint in the corner. And now you can make, collagen retinol revive cream with some hemp and fucking it helps great.
Fucking potheads.
Fuck you, man. Well, dude, thanks, Jay Wiz, for coming on and talking to us, dude. It's been a pleasure.
Definitely. All right. Bong hits and vodka drinks for everyone.
Boom. If you're ever at a Slightly Stupid show and you think it sounds awesome, tip your front of house engineer.
Go to front of house. If you don't think it sounds awesome, go to the monitor world and yell at that guy.
Otherwise, go to front of house and just like tap him on the back. He loves it. Just tap him on the back and start yelling at him.
Tell me the guitar's not loud enough.
Yeah. All right, everyone. We're going to end it. We'll see you next week. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate all your support. And we'll see you guys soon.
Keep up the great work, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank you, dude.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast. Thank you. See you next week.